Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, episode number 6. Your hosts today are Chad Beckman and Ed Snodgrass. Today they talk with Sharon Smith, executive consultant with C-Suite Results. The topic is, are we achieving unparalleled excellence? Now let's get to it.
The industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today.
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
But you also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
Sharon, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
You're, as I understand, the founder of the C-Suite Results. Could you tell us a little bit about your organization and what you do and maybe a little background?
Absolutely. C-Suite Results was born out of a place of frustration, actually. I had spent a lot of years in corporate as more as a consultant, but working with different organizations of various size, large and small. And I kind of hit a wall in 2015 because I've been doing the same work day in and day out, and just as many people do, hit the wall, and went and wanted to do something completely different away from security, went and got a coaching certification so that I could do executive coaching or some type of coaching, wanting to help individuals, but really executives because they are where the culture starts in an organization. And when you don't have a good culture, you have people coming into work every day who are just hanging in there, counting down the days till Friday, not engaged. And that really affects individuals and affects the bottom line, affects the culture of the organization. And I was tired of seeing that. And it was happening to me and it was happening to those around me. So C-Suite Results was born into an executive coaching business to help those executives really help turn around their culture and what I call creating organizations of unparalleled excellence, because I really think that's what it takes to have a competitive advantage and to have an organization where your employees actually want to show up on Monday. I live in the DC metro and traffic out here is atrocious and I can't fix traffic. And I thought if I could help organizations be places where people were excited to go, the traffic would be at least more bearable for them to deal with as they were going to a job they cared about. And that's where the title comes from. That's where it started. It has transformed, which is the way I describe what I do now. I'm really looking at transformation as a whole. From an executive coaching or leadership development perspective, that's transforming people, organizations, and cultures. But then I went back to my roots in security. I've been in information security since 2005, and I couldn't just let that go. I had such a depth and breadth of information out there to share that I wanted to start helping organizations in that space as well. So it's really become more about transformation. And right now, the two areas of transformation that I focus on are individuals from a leadership development or executive perspective for organizational development and cultures, whether it's an organization as a whole or a security team, because that's really what I know well, and a culture of security, or whether it's truly compliance and security. I do virtual CISO work, helping organizations who don't have a CISO because they can't afford one or don't need a full-time CISO, helping them with strategy and advisory to help them get to where they need to get, or pure compliance, maybe it's project-based, helping them transform their security posture. That's what the organization is today, and in the future, I can see different areas of transformation coming into the business as well, but that's where it stands today.
That's a great background and summary. Thank you. You used the term culture of security a couple of times. Could you describe for our listeners your definition of culture of security?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that I have a definition per se, but I would say that culture of security has everything to do with, from again, the top down, does the board take it seriously if there is a board, or is it just a C-suite executive team? Do they understand the importance of security, or are they constantly telling your IT department, figure it out with little budget? Do they understand and communicate security's importance throughout the business? Or does the business get to do whatever they want and make IT or security fix it and figure it out for them? I was with an organization for several years as a consultant where it was a very large organization with a reasonably sized information security department. But the business side of the house, the ones that brought in the profit, right, the ones that decided we're going to do a process this way or a process that way, really could get away with anything they wanted, and hopefully security could keep up or even be told and be informed that something was happening so they could help get in front of it. oftentimes they only were invited to the table at the end. As compliance started to come in, they were invited to the table more often because we had to work on compliance initiatives. But a culture of security means that each person in the organization understands how their acts affect the organization's security and what happens when that security is no longer there. That by clicking on this email or going to this website or circumventing this process, I'm actually hurting the organization and could lead to losses. I could lead to all kinds of things that I don't want to be responsible for because I understand my role. But that comes down to communication and leadership and a tone from the top that shows security is important. And that is a messaging strategy that most organizations I have found really don't have. And they are looking at security as more knee-jerk reactions after something has happened, or because there's a compliance initiative and all of a sudden they're going to be fined or not compliant or lose a contract because they haven't done these things and now it's a fire drill. So when security becomes a fire drill, that's one culture. That is a culture of security. It's not the culture that I would like to see, but it is a culture when everything is reactive versus an organization that says no, security will be built in from the front. We will make our business decisions based around whether we're doing things in the right way securely. That's a different kind of culture.
I like how you describe that. It's almost like I think of it as a data classification policy. You sort of have these different tiers of cultures of security. Everybody has one. It's just a matter of how it is defined in the organization. That's good. I haven't heard anybody talk
it. And honestly, most organizations don't stop to think about it, right? They're not sitting around defining, we have this kind of culture of security. They rarely define their own culture as a whole, let alone on this specific topic. But if they stop to think about it, if they're listening to this or reading any of my articles, I wrote an article, I think, titled The Culture of Security recently, and they actually stop to think about it, it's something that can change, right? You can actually sit down and strategize with the right people on how do we want to change that culture of security.
Very good.
Sharon, you mentioned initially about some aspects of transformation relating to information security. And I want to ask you about, given your background and some of the unique things that you've done, how have you kind of seen information security transform over the years? Now, let me qualify that question. I'm not talking so much about, the threat landscape or some of the potential tools, or tools that we've seen kind of emerge in the industry over the past 10 plus years. More so, I would like to know, how have you seen information security transform in the minds of business and technology leaders, both in terms of how they view security, how they view its potential value or, not value, and then in terms of how they factor that in potentially to making strategic business decisions. I know that's a big question with a lot of parts, but I'm really curious to see what your take is on that.
The short answer is probably not the one you're going to expect. The short answer is there hasn't been a transformation. People are still acting the way they did in the 90s. They're still putting maybe 3% of their budget towards security. They're still saying it won't happen to me. They're still throwing dollars only at knee-jerk reactions. And I'm not saying everybody out there is doing this, but for the most part, I would say it hasn't transformed nearly as much as you would think it has. The biggest transformation is the fact that it's not information security anymore. Now it's cybersecurity, right? That seems to be almost the biggest transformation is what we call it, and that people think it's sexy now. When I used to tell people I was an InfoSec or information security consultant, I kind of get this weird look, like no one knew what that meant outside of the industry, right?
Right.
Now I say I work in cybersecurity and everyone gets so excited and so interested and they want to talk to me about it. Nothing's changed. The work we do isn't really that different, except for there are different vulnerabilities. The threat landscape has changed, that we understand that. Other people only understand it from the perspective of what's being shown on television. The tools have definitely changed. Some really awesome tools out there today that organizations aren't using, though, or they don't use them well. A lot of organizations will go out and buy the fancy, shiny, blinky lights and the tools, and then they don't integrate it properly, or they don't have the staff to monitor it. They don't tune it. That hasn't changed. People have been buying tools for years. The tools have gotten better. I don't know that organizations are using them that much better. So I would love to say that things have changed. But from a security budget perspective, from how the board looks at it, from the attitude of, oh, this isn't going to happen to me. And even in today's age, I would expect more IT folks to be up on what I would consider basic security, like two-factor authentication or how we, deal with third-party vendors coming into our networks. They still don't. They're still doing what they did 10 years ago, as in not. doing those things. And so while I would love to say, oh my gosh, there's been this great transformation, we have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
Yeah, Chad and I can speak from our experience day to day that we agree with you, and it's actually refreshing to hear someone say it, be honest, because it seems like, there's a lot of press out there about the fact that, boardrooms are becoming more cybersecurity savvy, quote unquote, right? They're starting to add directors potentially that have more of a technology background or potentially more of a cybersecurity and cyber risk background. But yet, it still continues to seem like, to your direct point, not a lot is really changing out there. So that being the case, my next question is essentially, what does the industry need to start talking about or really addressing, that we're not doing today, that we're not really talking about today? I mean, what's the 800-pound gorilla in the room that we really should be getting down to brass tacks and talking about, both at the board level as well as the operational cybersecurity level?
Absolutely. So the actual 800-pound gorilla in the room, and I hate to call you an 800-pound gorilla because you are a CISO.
I'm only 600 pounds.
The CISO is not in the room. So the board may be bringing in a technical person to sit on the board, but if they're still being briefed by the CFO or the CIO on what's happening from a security perspective, even if they're technical, they don't have the information they need to make proper strategic decisions. Until organizations give the CISO or even have a CISO or have someone in a senior security role that actually has a seat at the same table as the rest of the executive team and can actually brief the board from their mouth, not two layers deep. I just had a conversation with an organization who said that they don't have a CISO. So it's the technical guy briefing the CIO, who's briefing like the CFO, who's briefing the board. I don't care how technical that board is. They're not getting the information they need to even make a strategic decision.
Right.
So until there are more CISOs or virtual CISOs or chief security officers or someone in an organization, whether it's a consultant working on behalf of the organization on a fractional basis, because not everyone needs or has the bandwidth or budget for full time, I get that. But they need somebody who then actually gets to brief the board directly, because you can't take a technical topic, distill it down into something the business will understand, and put it through two layers of business people before it gets to them and think that any strategic decisions are actually going to make a difference. So for me, that's the big one.
Now a word from our sponsor, TrustMap, the business management system for security leaders. Let's hear from Aaron Pritz, president of Aaron Pritz & Associates, as he identifies how TrustMap provided a real solution to a real problem.
This problem was I inherited the incumbent GRC solution, which felt like from, an ex-auditor to come up with some pretty simple risk assessments to assess against a standard operating procedure or a, NIST control framework, things like that. It would take months and hundreds of thousands of dollars, cumulative to millions of dollars, to put what I would describe as, a glorified spreadsheet. And I've heard other CISOs use that term. I can't claim credit for that term, and it's not a positive light term. I was introduced to TrustMap. I actually found some stuff online as I was spending some time over the holidays looking for the biggest problems that I had faced in information security risk management and really unmet needs and how those could be solved in different ways. And I've got a caveat that I'm not a go buy another tool type of advocate. In fact, I think there's too many tools in information security, and I think we need to do more to consolidate tools versus just keep adding them on. If you wrap all of the stuff that I just set up into one package, I would say if you want to do very effective assessments and set those up with little to no overhead, make them align to maturity frameworks, GDPR, CSF, anything that you want that's standard, and basically have very interactive assessments that you can get results back, have control owners. You've got your assessment thing solved in way less time and spend than doing something like Archer or really any of the other GRC products. I would not qualify TrustMap as a GRC. I think they do some GRC-like things, but I would say that they're everything that GRC wanted to be but didn't get there.
We'll come back later in the podcast to hear more from Aaron about his experience with TrustMap. For now, listeners of the podcast should know they can schedule a free trial of TrustMap at trustmap.com/business. Now let's get back to the show.
So now, you know, me as a CISO, I'm going to take some accountability and potentially throw myself under the bus here. Okay, we're at a point now, let's say the board understands that, you know what, we need to hear what our level of cyber risk is directly from the CISO's mouth. And then the CISO goes in, the CISO gets their 15 or 30 minute time slot each quarter and, you know, stands up and gives a presentation that consists primarily of operational data or, you know, endpoint data or phishing attempts or compliance driven type of reporting. And the board says, interesting, but how am I supposed to use that information to actually factor that into what our strategic business objectives are for next year? You know, so isn't some of the onus for communicating the proper information at the proper level to boardrooms on us as CISOs?
Okay, so it's on you as the CISO to communicate the right level of information. Endpoint security is not the right level of information to get to the board. Before you can brief the board on what's going to make the difference in helping them make their strategic decision, you as a CISO need to know what their risk tolerance is. You need to know what is their current strategic objectives. You need to know what they're interested in, what they understand, what they don't understand. And that probably means talking and having conversations with the CFO and the CTO and the entire C-suite. These are the kinds of conversations that the CISO needs to be at the table talking to the CEO or talking to whomever can say, this is the current strategy for the board. This is the direction we're trying to go. How can the CISO then present to the board information that they need to know in order to affect the direction that they're heading? And if, you know, phishing attempts and training and endpoint is going to do that, well, great. But if it's not, then there has to be a different metric that's being reported. You have to know what your board needs to know so that you can report properly. So it's not just about the CISO saying, I want to report these things because now I'm in the room. It's what are the right pieces of information to report? And every board's going to be different. So if you're a CISO in one organization and you leave for another organization, you need to learn, again, the culture, not necessarily the security culture, but the risk tolerance. What are they willing to accept, mitigate, and transfer? What is their strategy for some of this? Are they just wanting to buy cyber insurance and transfer some of the risk? How do they feel about the cloud? How do they feel about third parties? I mean, if they hate the cloud, they don't want to put any of their systems in there. You need to know that before you go brief on different security things and suggest we move into the cloud, because they're not going to be looking to go that route. But you also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. They don't want to know the problems. They want to know, if you're the security expert coming to them, letting them know what's happening, what's the solution? They shouldn't be having to figure that out, because then again, we're dealing with people who are too far removed from the problem and aren't technical necessarily. So problem and solution in a way that's already aligned with the strategy of the organization, which you have to, as the CISO, learn.
So Sharon, how does that look? So the CISO goes to the board, the executive team, and says, look, here are our risks. This is our capability today. In fact, I just spoke with somebody about their challenge today, and it was getting more people on their team, on their security team. So they bring that ask. So what kind of ask should a CISO be drawing for that audience? Is it, you know, I need more resources. We need to consolidate our technology. We need better insights. We need the funding. What type of ask is appropriate at the executive or the board level without bringing the technical speak to the conversation?
I think every board's going to be different. Every ask is going to be dependent on what the organization really needs. As the CISO, I would like to think would have a chain of command that isn't directly to the board that might be able to give you resources for another body in the seat without you having to go to the board. If you need a whole division stood up or an entirely new group with 10 people in it, I'm sure that would be a board ask, and you would have to have a very good explanation as to why your current team can't do what you're asking and what that's going to do for the organization and how in the long run that could increase revenue or decrease costs or protect the brand, depending on what's important to the board. Your ask is going to be very dependent on the size of your organization, your current structure, your needs. It's a really hard question to answer. There are definitely going to be times where the board may need to, if it's a big capital expenditure, may need to be involved. And there's times where maybe someone else can make that decision, or you can make that decision because of the cost, and you're just reporting up to the board why you're making that decision and why you're doing what you're doing. But it always is going to come down to making sure that whatever you're reporting is not too technical, because you're going to lose them quick. You need to relate it to something they completely understand, whatever that looks like. Find the analogy that they are going to understand and want to be part of the solution, or be willing to trust you in the solution that you're going to give.
Yeah, one thing we talk about a lot is translating the business of security. And I think that's kind of the theme we're exploring here today, is how is the translating the business of security, translating the technical data and the risks to business leaders?
That's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. And I think it's to your point. It really depends on the environment, the size of the organization, size of the team, and what the ask is.
I mean, it's kind of the type of business. If you work for a technology company, you very well might have people in the business who understand technology, right? But if you work for a financial institution or a retailer or someone that has not a technology business, it's a very different conversation. And if the CISO grew up through technology and has a really technical background, they may not have that communication skill. And it is a skill. This is the thing we forget. And one of the topics I talk on a lot is – these are skills when we move into leadership. You can go from being a technical person or a security consultant or certain things where you're the worker bee. And as you move into leadership, you have to learn a very different skill set, how to communicate, how to write, how to do all these soft skills that you may have to take upon yourself. If you're a security professional and you want to be a CISO, or you're working your way up and your organization's not going to give you budget to go learn how to communicate properly or how to translate technology into business, take it upon yourself if you want to be successful that you need to learn how to do these things. And you can practice on non-technical people and see if they understand it. Ask your spouse, ask your friends, say, hey, I want to run something by you. If I explain this to you, let me know if it makes sense. And if they don't understand it at all, you probably have some work to do, and they can tell you what didn't make sense. You can hire coaches and speaking consultants. And there are folks that literally focus on leadership, like their presence, leadership presence, like the presence in a boardroom. How do you go into a boardroom and have leadership presence? And there are folks out there that can take you and walk you through that and help you get to a point where you can communicate it and distill it down. It's one of those weird skill sets I ended up with, because I went from auditing to technology. I didn't grow up through technology. That when I did get to technology and didn't understand it myself, I had to learn it as I went. So as I learned it, I had to dumb it down for myself, or I had to make it make sense. And so now I'm able to very easily talk to a business user about technology in a non-technical way. But that is something that is not easy for technical people. So depending on how your CISO is coming up through the organization, or any senior security leader, they have to take it upon themselves to learn those skills of communication if they want to succeed and they want their organizations to listen to them.
Yeah, I think that's a huge call out, and one that I know personally I can certainly get better at. And I think that the majority of my colleagues probably could too. I don't think anyone's got it all figured out, because like you said, all boards are different and all board directors are different. So everyone's going to have kind of a unique perspective in terms of what they need to hear in order to make those decisions. So, Sharon, that being the case, as you work with, security leaders or technology leaders that perhaps are responsible for security and communicating those concepts to the C-suite and the board level, what are some questions that you could impart to kind of our audience that they might expect to hear, business kind of focused questions about security that they might expect to hear from the C-suite and or the board?
I don't know if it's going to come from the C-suite or the board, but you're going to need to be able to answer questions. They're going to want to know why. Why now? Why us? This isn't going to happen to us is a thing you hear a lot. This isn't going to happen to us. Who would want our data? And that's just silly. You need to be able to communicate that if it's easy to break in, someone's going to break in. It's the idea that I was actually saying to a client earlier today. If you put the ADT sign out front of your door at home, a burglar's just going to go next door. They're not going to bother, even if there's a way in. There's always a way in, I'm sure, to circumvent a security system. There's probably always going to be a way into a network. The question is, can you detect that they came in, or can you prevent it because you made it hard enough that they're just going to go somewhere else? And that's one of the key things is – larger organizations that we're not hearing breaches on are most likely spending good money, because it's good money, but on the right thing, to be able to monitor and know if someone gets in. If someone gets into your network and you can figure it out within 24 hours, 48 hours, even a week, that is very different than some of the breaches we've seen that, oh, they were in for 6 months and we didn't know it. It's really about helping them understand, and they're going to ask the question, you know, why do we need to spend this money on this? That hasn't happened to us yet. And oftentimes an organization could say that, and it's happening to them right now. They just don't know because they don't have the right tools in place.
Right.
And so you have to be able to communicate without fear, uncertainty, and doubt in all cases. That's not always the answer, but really putting it into real world situations as to why. And another area that I've heard a lot of security professionals talk about is, oh, it's like having insurance. You wouldn't drive your car without insurance, and you have homeowners insurance, and security is like insurance. And I completely disagree, because insurance makes you whole. So if I crash my car, my insurance will get me a new car. Or if something's stolen out of my house, my insurance will get that back from me. Well, that's not what security does. Security doesn't make it better, right? It doesn't fix the problem. Security is more like the guard at the front gate, or the force protection, if we're going to talk military speak, to stop someone from coming in, or if they do get past the perimeter, you know, jumping on them as soon as they're, you know, across the White House lawn. That's what security does. And from a physical security perspective or a network perimeter perspective, security is there to stop them from coming in. And if they come in, catching them quickly, or even catching mistakes and errors that users might have that aren't malicious. That's security. If someone wipes out a database, that's a problem, even if it's a mistake. How quickly can you catch that and fix it? So letting organizations know that there is cybersecurity insurance, but security is not insurance. Security is really your front line, right? The reason you have a military and a police force, frontline protection from the enemy.
How do you, what you just spoke about is, how do you determine when you have enough security? You know, that is everybody's Shangri-La, and they're trying to determine when they've arrived. Compliance is easy because we're checking boxes, and it's somewhat black and white. But security is not. And I think we all agree that compliance doesn't equal security.
Absolutely.
So how do we know when we have enough security guards, when the fence is high enough? Again, using the physical security analogy here. Do we do that through measuring the performance of our security program? Do we do that through classic IT auditing of controls? What is your suggestion?
Oh, I hate the term IT auditing of controls because I've done it so many times. Brings back nightmares. No, not at all. I mean, it's important. You need to do things like that. What's enough? It's so hard to say what's enough. I would say that you have to tune it. If you have got nothing, something's better than nothing. You have to start somewhere. But then you have to keep tuning it. You can't just throw something in out of the box and expect it to work the way it's supposed to work. It has to be tuned. If we have the right monitoring in place, or we have monitoring in place and we're seeing constant attacks on our network, what do we need to change to see less attacks on our network? What is that number that we're comfortable with to say, okay, this number of attacks we know we can stop and we're comfortable with, and anything more than that we feel is a problem? And how do we change that? Is it something at the perimeter we need to fix? Is it a different tool? What's going on that is bringing this in? Can we catch something? So penetration testing, honestly, is probably one of the best ways to know how you're doing from a security perspective. Bring in a third party. You can red team, which would be your red team, right? You're the folks trying to break in, and red team, blue team it. So your network, your security team is the blue team, right? They're here to protect your organization, and then bring in a red team to penetrate the organization. And whether you start with a known test and everyone is expecting it, so they're sitting at their desk. And the analogy I would say is right after 9/11, my office window used to face the Pentagon, and they would line the police up on Army Navy Drive for a practice, a practice scenario. They'd have the fire department and ambulances and police, and they were just waiting to start their exercise. And I would sit there, and this is before I was ever in security, and say, well, that's not realistic. What are you testing? What are you testing when you line them up? So penetration testing is often known ahead of time, and you are doing the penetration testing to test how well your security is there, lessen your testing, your response to it. But if you wanted to test full blown and really know how are we, do we have enough resources? Do we have enough staff? Would we catch it? You red team, blue team it, and you don't even tell your blue team, your internal staff, that you're doing the test. You set it up with your pen testers, your red team. You rules of engagement get set up. Times you know about it as the CISO, or the few people on the team staff know about it and nobody else does. and you see how well they react, and you see how well they respond, and you see how far the red team can go. And that's how you start to know how you're doing, is by actually testing it and with real world scenarios that could really happen to you. And not only do you know where your security's at from the pen tester was able to get to the database, but you also know how well your team is trained to respond to and deal with that.
That's outstanding. And again, it's interesting too, that you kind of go down that path, because, you know, we see a lot of companies, and I work with peers, obviously, that, you know, may have a fantastic incident response plan that's been written up and it's sitting on a shelf and everyone knows where it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when something actually occurs, the incident response plan, you know, typically you try to follow it line by line, doesn't always work. And then, you know, because it hasn't been practiced, right? It hasn't been rehearsed. And, you know, more importantly, I think that, you know, there's nothing that will drive home the potential importance of security more than, you know, bringing those high-level C-suite business leaders in and having them participate, you know, in an incident response plan. You know, you bring corporate communications in, and you bring legal in, and you bring potentially the CFO or the CEO in, and really kind of, you know, run an honest-to-goodness incident response, you know, tabletop exercise. It's crazy how many companies out there may have a fantastic incident response plan, but sometimes the attitude is, well, you know what, the InfoSec team kind of has it, and if they need to let us know something, then they'll let us know that we need to be concerned. So,
right, but when did the InfoSec team ever been responsible for hands on the servers, right? So the IT team, and that's the thing a lot of people don't understand, is your InfoSec group and your IT group are not the same group of people unless you're in a very, very small shop.
Right.
Where then you have your two people who are IT people, and tomorrow they become security people because there's no one else, right? And that, again, is a result of poor security culture, where it's like, instead of bringing in a security expert, we're just going to make one of our IT people in charge of security and compliance. I've seen business continuity testing, and it had nothing to do with security, just plain old, can we keep our business up and running, done in such a way that it was such a planned exercise, right? The mainframe folks would bring up the mainframe, the Linux guys would bring up the Linux, and the Windows, and it's like, that's not how it's going to work when we have a real incident. Your mainframe guy could be stuck somewhere else.
Right.
Who else can bring it up based on the written instructions? Because they were able to bring it up based on their knowledge. And to me, I was auditor at the time. That was back in the day when I was doing internal audit. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work.
Right.
I have an issue with that. And it's exactly what they were doing outside of the Pentagon. They had their people lined up. And that's exactly what people do when they tabletop and exercise. I mean, yeah, it's great to do it where you have your people involved because you do want to make sure that they can respond to an incident and an issue, but you also have to think about who's going to respond if someone's not available.
Now let's hear more from Aaron Pritz as he describes what TrustMap is in his own words.
The other parts of my job is with program maturity, some really nice things that the product's doing to, you know, rate yourself via the control owners that actually own controls, and again, very interactive assessment tools to kind of rate yourself and rate your program and be able to see, you know, are you moving the ball or not? I think over-investing in anything and everything and having tons of funding that doesn't really get spent effectively is a problem in security. So you've got to really measure where you're moving the needle and really align that to your portfolio and program management, which you can also do in TrustMap. What is TrustMap? I would really say it's the framework alignment of GRC into the ability to do assessments. I think it really does a lot of the things that GRC wanted to do, but again, more and in less time and far less money. It's all the portfolio and program management that currently in InfoSec groups are cobbled together through Microsoft Project, SharePoint, and Excel tracking, and PowerPoint status updates. And then it's also program maturity measurement, which right now a lot of programs, including my prior program, we were basically doing everything in Excel and PowerPoint to try to keep tabs on where are we pushing the needle or not. And again, spending hours and weeks and months working on some of the stuff that I saw right out of the box in the first 30 minutes of the demo of TrustMap. So those are a few of the thoughts that I would say why I'm so excited about TrustMap and why I would be, you know, if I go back to a corporate security leadership job, why I would be coming out of the gate with that versus trying some of the things that I've already tried and weren't overly happy with.
Remember, listeners of the podcast can schedule a free trial of TrustMap at trustmap.com/business. Now let's get back to the show.
What I heard you say earlier on as well is when we talk about how much is enough, which kind of led us down to this, you know, the respondents and testing our capabilities, is start somewhere and then build on those basic foundation and improve those capabilities over time. That's, yeah. I think, ultimately what we're saying here by using, you know, red teaming, blue teaming, and incident response exercises as an example.
Absolutely. It's not like on January 1st when we all do our New Year's resolutions to lose weight, we're going to – the right way to go about doing – the successful way is not to say, okay, I'm going to cut out sugar, alcohol, fast food, and exercise 5 days a week and start doing these things I've never done before. That's not how you are succeed. It's I'm going to start this one new thing, and then I'm going to build upon it. I'm going to figure out what's working and what's not working. And I talk about this a lot, is you have to talk about what's not working, because if you keep doing something because the status quo, but it doesn't really get you a benefit, you shouldn't be doing it. But the only way to fix that is as a group, a technology group, a security group, the board, the C-suite, I don't care who the group is, you have to have those after-action reports. You have to look at things. You have to look back and go, oh, is this process still working? And if it's not working, what are we going to do differently? But it's that idea of, okay, we don't have much security today. What's the one thing we can do this quarter that's going to make a difference? And maybe it's simply policies and training. Maybe it's not even buying, you know, equipment. We know the end user is our weakest link, right? And what is it next quarter? Maybe we'll bring in a technology. Maybe we'll outsource something, and we just start building upon it and then testing it and looking at it and what's working and what's not working. And it's a constant process thing. This is not a one and done deal.
Yeah, that's yeah. Absolutely true. It's not one and done. It's never completed. Every day is different as well. And, you know, anybody in a SOC could probably tell you that. If you're going in to consult with your customers and helping them to get a handle on the security program, where is it that you normally begin? And what is the, you know, first or second conversation you have with your customers?
Great. I love that question. Do they have a security program? Do they have it formalized and documented? Do they know where their data is? How many organizations I've been to who think all their sensitive data is over here on these servers, when in all actuality, the business has stood up some access databases or Excel spreadsheets or other things on a file server somewhere else or on their desktops or in another system that security doesn't know about, because it made their job easier. And they don't understand that that's a problem because they've never been trained. They don't have a culture where it says you're responsible for this data. And if this data is on these types of systems, it can be stolen. Do they know where their data is? And in many cases, they think they know where their data is. And then I start to interview business users and I'm like, yeah, you guys also have data in your on your NAS, your SAN, your email exchange server. You've got data over here. You've got data over there. And the IT guys are like, oh, they had no idea. They had no idea. So what is this? What needs to be protected? First of all, you know, you really have to start with the basics, is what are you trying to protect? What if it's taken could ruin your business? Is it intellectual property? Is it customer information? Is it PII? What is it? Where is it? And do we have a handle on controlling it, securing it, and who has access to it? Some of this doesn't take technology that you don't already have. Every organization has an access control system that they can do user credentials and say, you can have this access and you can have this access. But if the data is everywhere and that's out of control, you got to start there. So we really have to understand how bad, I hate to say how bad the picture is, but we have to paint the picture. Mm-hmm. And what does it look like? And so it's a lot of interviews. It's a lot of conversations. It's a lot of understanding the organization. That's where I have to start. If I'm doing it because it's a compliance project and I know that what we're looking to protect is credit card data because we're doing PCI, then that's what we handle. That's what we talk about. Those are the business users I'm going to interview. But I have to know the business flow of that data because IT can't tell me. IT is never going to be able to tell me every business flow and where all the data is. It's just not possible because that's not their job.
So really the first activity, and this could go for anyone looking to start a security program, is to identify and uncover where the data is that is most sensitive and needs protecting for the business, such as PHI, PII, financial information, medical information, so forth.
Absolutely, because are you gonna build a fort, or are you gonna build, you know, a small been surrounded. It depends on what the data is and how important it is. And you can't determine what tools you need or how much you're going to spend or what your budget is to protect something when you don't know where it is and what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can then right size the investment based on that discovery.
And you can also talk to the business about asking, do they really need the data? Because if we can get rid of the data, we don't have to do all these things. Mm-hmm. And then the cost can go down. And is there another way they can do that process without that piece of data? And when they realize that if they really, really, really want that piece of data, they're going to have to do X, Y, and Z, and they can't store it here, and they have to store it here, and it's going to take two-factor authentication to get to it, all of a sudden they're going to be like, we don't need the data.
See, now that's what we're talking about. That is called the business of security, having that business-minded focus, hat on, if you will, when addressing and making recommendations to the business on – you know, what would need to be done if the data is retained, and so questioning how necessary it is.
Yeah, I don't think it's security or IT job to tell the business what they can and can't have. I think it's their job to say, if you want that data, here are the things we're going to have to do. How would you like to accomplish this?
And it could be also a cost, I suppose, could be reduced by also transferring the data to another location or another service provider.
Yep, that's already gone through their SOC testing and you're comfortable with their security controls. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. That's a good insight, good feedback.
So we like to ask the question as we kind of wrap up here, and that is, Taryn, if you could change one aspect of our industry, you know, just change it kind of systemically, what would that be?
It would be what I mentioned earlier, more CISOs in organizations with a real seat at the table.
Do you think that's going to happen in 2018 at a much faster pace than it did in the previous years?
I would love to say yes, but based on what I've seen in the past, I can't say yes to that. The only way that's going to happen is if the board and the CEO and the hiring folks, A, that side of the house starts to say, yes, we need that kind of resource. And then it's going to take the CISO saying, as they're going through the interview process or they're getting offered the job, say, I'll take this job. You're offering me this job, but only if I report to the CEO or to the board or to general counsel or to someone outside of the CIO, CFO chain. And I know a CISO who's done that. And I was incredibly impressed when I heard that. I go, how did you get out of reporting to the CIO? And he said, I told him I wouldn't take the job if that was my reporting structure. Wonderful. And I thought that was awesome. I mean, it takes a lot of guts to do that. They might, you know, rescind the offer. But at the same time, if you're serious in your role as a CISO and you think it's that important, then you want to work for an organization that takes you seriously in that role, an organization that wants you there because of your knowledge and because of your skill set, is not going to fight you on who you report to if they think having you is that important. And if they don't think that's important, then maybe they're the wrong organization, because maybe you're just going to be fighting day in and day out for anything because they don't take you seriously anyway.
Yes. Oh, that is such a great point. So I would summarize that to everyone listening who's a CISO or aspiring to be a CISO one day, is have enough confidence in your abilities to make those requests. In order to be successful, as Sharon is pointing out, make the requests that ahead of time that you know are going to help you to be successful, instead of perhaps being buried under a couple layers within the IT department and a, you know, 2-3% of the IT budget for security.
Yep. There you go. You said it perfectly.
All right, Sharon, thank you very much for your time today. It was a pleasure having you on our show. And if our guests, we like to give the opportunity to share contact information with our listeners. So how would somebody get a hold of you if they want to have a further conversation on the subject?
Love it. Thank you for that. So my email address is really simple. It's Sharon, Sharon, at csuiteresults.com, and that's C-Suite, S-U-I-T-E, results.com. I also have a podcast called C-Suite Success Radio that people can take a listen. And if they want to read any of the articles I mentioned, go to C-Suite Network Advisors, and you can look me up there. All my articles, whether they're leadership or cyber articles, are all available on that site. I'm a contributing editor. So there's different ways to get content from me, and if you want to reach out, email's great.
Excellent. Thanks so much again. I appreciate you sharing the insights with us, and I look forward to speaking again very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. This was so much fun.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Security podcast. A special thanks to today's guest, Sharon Smith, executive consultant with C-Suite Results. Your hosts today were Chad Beckman, founder and CEO of Secure Digital Solutions, and Ed Snodgrass, chief information security officer at SDS. You can connect with Chad and Ed on LinkedIn and learn more about Secure Digital Solutions at trustsds.com. Our show was produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. Check out our next podcast episode with Jason Moraros, Special Projects and Security Manager with the Minnesota Twins. The topic is operating a major league ball club. You've been listening to the Business of Security podcast, and that's a wrap.